My name is Andy Hamilton, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, I've called it Corfall. My kids called it Corfall anyway, and I'll explain kind of what that is as we go through. My name's Andy Hamilton, CEO of the Ice House. We help entrepreneurs start, grow, and exit. A massive part of what we do is to work with people to help them through change. A lot of people think, you know, working with startups or entrepreneurs, it's all about, you know, sales, marketing, finance. It's about a lot of these functional things. But a major part of what we do is about trying to enable the change in the people and trying to plant seeds in their heads or bombs, as the case may be, as they go on their entrepreneurial journey. And what the guys at Microsoft asked me to do today was just to share a little bit around the people side of that. So you now have the opportunity, if you're worried about being squeamish or uncomfortable as we go through a personal development journey. I take no responsibility for the slides. When I looked at the demographics of TechEd, I thought there's 98% men and 2% women. So for the woman in the audience, I do apologise for one slide in particular. The 98% men, I think you'll like it. Right. So let's set the scene. Who would want to take rockets into space? Anyone know? Yeah. Anyone know Peter Beck? Anyone know Peter Beck? If you do, yeah. Who's Peter Beck? Yeah. You're right. The Kiwi guy throwing rockets into space from Auckland Airport. And next year, or maybe the year after, his vision is to send 100 rockets from up in the far north. His vision is to be the DHL of space. The DHL of space. This is the bad slide. Catherine Wilson. Anyone know who Catherine Wilson is? Anyone in the audience? The chicks must know. Yeah, who is Catherine Wilson? She's a shoe designer. For those of you who can't see, this is a worry. I did consider, as shock and awe, that I might wear sheer stockings and come up on stage. I decided that you'd prefer looking at the girls up there. These shoes are Catherine Wilson shoes. She does men's, not many, and a lot of women's shoes. She's New Zealand's only shoe designer. If, as a man, you really like shoes like this, because I get comments, I'm her greatest ambassador. I've just been in China, and I had so many people saying, oh my God, those shoes are amazing. If you want to buy them, she's quite remarkable, this lady. The shoe sizes, she's thought about men and women, the shoe sizes are one size bigger than what you normally buy in normal men's design shoes. So it makes you as a man feel even more powerful. Who wants to be able to predict the next great hit before it's even released? If you think about that, there's lots of things like Nielsen ratings right now that help determine how successful a show or a film has been. Warren and his team from Parrot Analytics that work with us at the Ice House is actually doing that right now with a little bit of data science, a little bit of machine learning, and running around the BitTorrent world predicting future performance of unreleased titles. Anyone know who this gorgeous, gorgeous man is? Anyone? His name is Jimmy Hunt. Jimmy Hunt is the co-founder of an organisation called the Live More Awesome Trust. You may know him from the crazy guy that liloed down the Waikato. Anyone remember that? On a lilo. He did the world's largest water slide out Henderson Way. And he did the biggest water fight in Auckland City about a year ago. And next year, he's doing, I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this, but anyway, he's doing the world's largest water slide at Coronet Peak. Jimmy's mission is to raise awareness around depression and that it's okay to be depressed and that it's okay to tell other people that you're feeling a bit down. For those of you who don't know Jimmy and you have a personal experience like I do with him, it is the most gorgeous photo. Because for me, it's got a degree of fragility around it. I may be overreading that, but it's a great photo. Those people I just shared with you sound like kind of, you know, Catherine Wilson, only shoe designer, Peter Beck, rockets into space, Jimmy Hunt, quite extraordinary things. Now, this is some of those people. Which one do you think Jimmy is? Anyone know who Jimmy is? On there. I think it's obvious who the rocket guy is, right? Eh? He's one crazy person. No, the guy in the bucket. Jimmy. Some of these other guys. Who's heard of Juicy Group here? Yeah. That's Tim in front of the helicopter. And that's him playing on some old relic 30 years ago, 20 years ago. There's Catherine. That's pretty obvious. This guy here is Adam Clark. He's co-founder of a company called MCOM that sold to Fiserv a couple of years ago. And that guy up there is Alexei Duniev, who's trying to do transcription, translation around the world and doing a startup between Silicon Valley, Belarus, and Auckland. And the guy up there is Warad Sager from Parrot Analytics. Other than the rocket guy, most of those people just look normal, just like you and me. I suppose the question is, and the other thing I would say is, I need to pad my content because I don't have an hour to go through with all of my slides. So if any time you want to ask a question, make a comment, please do. And if I don't get anything, we'll either finish early or I'll look for a friendly face in the audience and ask them a question, like the man in the second row there at the front. And not you, no, the guy behind you. And we'll pad it out. I suppose, you know, when you hear those stories of taking rockets into space, it's pretty clear that it's not actually that easy, right? It's not that easy to be globally successful, globally identified. It's not easy at all. So Corfu is here to help. Personally, you know, I've been at the Ice House since 2001. You know, I got a job because I got engaged to a South African religious woman, and her father would not let me get engaged if I didn't have a job. So back then, 13 years ago, I looked around and said, been made redundant by Fletcher Building, no income, mid-30s, bit of a rascal, I better get a job. And I got a job at the Ice House being the CEO. Didn't really know what it was. And since then, it's been the most remarkable experience and journey that I've been very blessed to be at in helping entrepreneurs. What I am now is I'm a pattern matcher. And a pattern matcher is I see lots of things with lots of entrepreneurs, lots of outcomes, and then I try, because I'm a bit neurotic, to understand patterns in there. Patterns of markets, patterns of people, patterns of behaviour that will help me in helping the next group. One of the sayings we talk about is, has the wave formed? Or are you trying to form the wave? We talk about, is it an aspirin or a vitamin? And a few other things like that. And in reflection, this corf, whatever, is basically competence, attitude, wisdom, and failure. And I came up for it because I had to come up for something about, you know, making yourself awesome for this talk today. Ironically, it then became something that made a lot of sense, not just because I came up with it. Right, competence. Who's this crazy mother? Anyone know? Malcolm Gladwell. Who's read the book? What's the book called? Outliers. And there's a few others as well. Hands up who's read those books. I played a lot of golf from about age 15 to 25, right? A lot of golf. And a lot of golf at university. And I was never a great golfer. I did get to play tournaments at an amateur level. And I always found it really frustrating playing with older people who just always whipped your ass. And when I was younger, I just couldn't understand why. You know, some people are natural, right? Some people will pick it up. But most of the rest of us need to travel the yards. And what's been really interesting for me since those times and since my mates have started playing golf, it's a really frustrating game for them because they were starting to pick it up at age 25. The thing I didn't realise was it takes a long time to be good. Now, for those of you who've got kids and you see your kids playing on the piano or playing the violin, 1 or 2% get it straight away. But most of the rest of them, you're going, God, they sound like crap. You know, and they do. But it takes time for them to get better. What Malcolm Gladwell talked about is it takes a long time to be great. It takes a long time to be expert. Once I kind of read this book, it made me feel a lot more comfortable about the pursuit of excellence. Because it's just time, right? It's 10,000 hours. And as I lay in bed this morning telling my 10-year-old about Corfu, you know, she was going, well, how many hours is that? And I was like, well, 365 times 10 times 24. That's about, you've done eight, I think I said, well, you've done 80,000 hours already in your life. So you should be good at the piano. And my religious wife was saying to me, will you just stop swearing? You're leading a very bad example. I think whenever we think whether we're a coder, whether we're a sports person, whatever that is, whether we're a manager of people, the cool thing I get from this, it takes a long time. And it's a great thing for impatient people. Even though a 10-year-old or a 15-year-old is not going to listen to you, is to think about sharing with them, hey, there's no rush. It's going to take 10,000 hours. You know, the really anal people, they'll work it out in a spreadsheet and they'll do their daily, how many hours they're going to do, and they're going to work out by the time they're 45, they're expert. I think the point is, to be great, you need to spend a lot of time. And a lot of what we do with our entrepreneurs in New Zealand, one of the challenges we have is that a lot of us are generalists. And when you go into Shanghai or you take your software into Silicon Valley or you go to Singapore, they crave specialization. They don't give a toss that you're great at a lot of things or good at a lot of things. They want to know what's your niche, what are you expert at, what can you really do well. This 10,000 hours and competence is something that is, I think, really important. Attitude. It's a great image. I love the image, not only because I've got all females in my house, including the dog, but what this image to me is of the next generation of people that are mostly younger than everyone else in this room. The people who have been really successful around transformation, you know, they have an internal motor. They have choice. And maybe they have a crazy gene. Not everyone has a crazy gene, but when you see some of these people who wanted, you know, it's pretty obvious to say someone who wanted to commercialize space, to put thousands and thousands of satellites into space, maybe slightly has a crazy gene. I think if you talk to Peter Beck, he would say he doesn't. Catherine Wilson, does she have a crazy gene? She's got a crazy personality. I think attitude, and a lot of us who are all hiring, don't we often say, God, I wish I'd really checked myself on hiring that person because their attitude sucked. Functional skills, great. But if they don't have the right attitude, and you don't have the right attitude, then it's not going to be good. So this is wisdom. Competence, attitude, wisdom. Wisdom is earned, right? It's a bit like that's 10,000 hours. What I observe with a lot of people is you also don't have to be brilliant from day one. One of the things you observe with some of these great people is they're learners. You know, they're both belligerent and flexible. They'll start saying, no, you're full of crap. And then they'll go away and think about it overnight. You know, they have both of those, so whether it's a tautology or not. So they're both closed and they're both open. When you talk to them originally, they may actually feel like they're not listening. The really great ones go away, think about it, compute it, and then make decisions about that. Wisdom is also recognizing that you might not have the skills or experience that you need to be successful and that you can find other people around you. Again, we see it time and time again. And the really interesting thing is if you say to a startup entrepreneur, say who is launching a wearable, you say, go to Silicon Valley and find the guy or the girl that did the first generation of wearables and has exited and has got 20 million and see if you can get them to help you. And they go, so why would you do that? And I say, well, because he's been there and he's done it. And he's done it before. And won't he help you get there quicker? If he helps you get there quicker, then you're a wise person. A lot of entrepreneurs are not prepared. Are not prepared to reach out to others because they think it's weakness. My 10-year-old said, is that the guy in South Africa? And I went to my assistant and said, did you really take that image? Failure. Failure makes us, it defines us, and it drives us. I'm not sure failure in the accordance of America's Cup is something that we all want to be proud of or embrace, right? And it is a bit twee, but, you know, just remember all of us, I think, learn so much more when we go around with the tail between our legs. It drives us to be better the next time. So much more than success. So much more than success. I've sort of shared, you know, these people, so up the top, you're up over here is Tim Alp from Juicy. Warrid from Parrot Analytics. I've done Jimmy. That's Adam Clark with the grey hair. Looks a bit different than before. Catherine Wilson. Sean Simpson from LanzaTech. Now lives in Chicago. Peter Beck. Alexei Duniev. And this guy is a guy called Fadi Mashriki, who is a co-founder of Power by Proxy, which does wireless inductive power for consumer and industrial devices like on tablets and phones. And Samsung is an investor in TE Connectivity. And I tell you a story. A lot of these people, you know, when you go back, it's really easy to rationalize and say that my law of Corfu fits them, right? And there is a quote that I saw that I really loved. I am large. Maybe I'm larger than I was. I am large. I contain multitudes. And that was a guy called Walt Whitman, who said that we are multiplicit. So we're not actually just one thing. And maybe I've rationalised this core for with those people. When I look at their journeys, Peter Beck is a really good example of someone who spent hours and hours. He's got no university degree. And he's taking rockets into space. He worked as, a fitter and a turner at Fisher & Paykel Appliances and at Industrial Research. Sean Simpson was one of his mentors when he was looking to raise some money last year. And Sean and I said, he came and said, look, what do you think I should do? I need to raise $15 million to commercialise space. And we're kind of going, right, okay. And so Sean said to him, mate, you could probably get that money out of New Zealand if you worked really hard. But you need to go where there are people who actually understand the enormity and the challenge of what you're trying to do and will be able to come on board with you and help you on that journey. So his advice was go to the Valley, go to Silicon Valley, and go and pitch to investors up there, VCs like Vinod Khosla and Peter Thiel. 6.5 weeks later, I got a call from Pete, and he said, g'day, I'm back. And we're like, I was like, where have you been? He said, mate, I went to the Valley. You guys said I needed to go to the Valley, so I've been there, and I've pitched, and I'm back, and I haven't got the money, but I've got an invite to go back in 2 weeks. And he went back in 2 weeks, and in 45 minutes, he pitched to 20 partners of Khosla Ventures, and he got the handshake at the end of it. Like, phenomenal, right? And this photo of him is in a pinstripe suit. And when I went to his launch about 6-8 weeks ago at the Auckland airport, here is a dude who used to drive motorbikes with bloody rockets on the back in a pinstripe suit, greeting everyone at the door, and then giving the most unbelievable speech. And there's some great YouTube clips of his vision for what he wants to do with Rocket Lab. Just, you know, amazing. If you think about it, he spent all the time, he's got the most unbelievable attitude. He's got incredible culture in his team. And he's put people around him who have 3, 4, 5 more degrees than he ever had. A phenomenal, phenomenal story. And he's learned as he's gone all of the way. He's also incredibly generous to other people. Quite an extraordinary. Right, the squeamish bit. That's meant to be you. Oh, it is you. I was actually going to try and get a photo and put it into, or a video into the slide deck, but I thought that might be going too far. So, you know, the question for you is, you know, how do you, maybe you don't want to take rockets into space, you know, maybe you've got other plans. But I think without a plan, and for what I'll tell you next, it's irrelevant. I read this article recently. A Russian guy, consultant, sent me this article, and this quote from Leo Tolstoy I think is amazing. Everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself. My pattern matching experience of watching successful people and unsuccessful is a lot of them will say the higher they go, the better, you know, the older they get, the wiser they get, the majority of problems they have are people or behavioural. They get past those 10,000 hours, they do become expert in what they do. What holds them back and what challenges them is actually how they interact with and deal with people. We've all had, I don't know how many of you work in corporates, but we've all had HR come to you. If you haven't had HR come to you, good luck, that's great. For those of us who've had HR saying, you know, you really shouldn't talk to people that way. And you're like, well, they're bloody useless. Can you fire them, please? No, we're going to fire you for being difficult and belligerent. The people side is something that is, you know, I think really quite telling on people as they grow. You can make the choice that you don't believe in that stuff and you're not going to get affected by it. But the reality is, and you also don't need to be so namby-pamby that you're way out there on the, you know, on the whole people side. But we see it a lot with the entrepreneurs, even the people who've got $200 million businesses. If they're not prepared to change, if they're not prepared to change the way that they work and manage with people, then they'll just stay still. And for those of you who want to stay still, that's fine. But I think the opportunity is how you can leverage, you know, yourself. And I've got I've got something. There's this thing called awareness, and I'm going to try and take you through it. It's a little bit complicated. There's a thing called profile awareness and state awareness. Profile awareness is who you are, how you act, how you feel in situations. You know, and being a leader today and taking accountability includes understanding your own motivations and your own inner drives. So profile awareness is really about trying to understand what causes you to be driven, to do what you do, and to say what you say after the fact. And again, it might sound, you know, I suppose this quote's quite good. Leading yourself means being in tune with what's happening on the inside, not later, but right now. And that's the connection to state awareness. So profile awareness is looking back and going, ah, that's why I reacted like that. So for example, if I give you an example of me, when I first did 360-degree reviews at the Ice House, I found that my staff loved me. Now, the staff told me that they love me because they get paid by me. You know, and maybe they didn't feel safe that they could actually tell me what they really thought. Profile awareness is trying to understand how you behave in those sorts of situations. And the work that I've done is about, you know, if you react to certain situations, the state awareness element is, uh-oh, here we go. I'm getting into this situation. I know I'm going to react like this. Now I need to find a way to deal with that. And it's a really interesting thing. People have to use different tools to be able to do this, but if you know, what I say to a lot of owner managers, do you want to be the guy that wakes up in the middle of the night worrying about the business? You know, when you're 55 and 65, don't you want your team waking up in the middle of the night worrying about the business while you sleep through? So if you want to be a control freak all your life and your team to sleep through, then be a control freak. If not, when they come to you for advice, empower them. Let them have the original thought. Let them go and make the mistakes. Don't always be trying to jump in on top of them. So the example around profile awareness is for an owner or an entrepreneur or for you to recognize why you act in certain situations. And then how you change that. And it's a really interesting thing. If any of you have been through change in your life, it's quite remarkable if you work on it yourself and then your team don't recognise any change that you're making. And that's because you're still acting subconsciously in the same way that you've done before, or they just don't see the changes that you've made because they've lived with you for that long. So profile awareness and I think state awareness are really fundamentally important. Knowing in each situation, how you're behaving and how you can prevent. I don't know whether you've ever done it before, but gone, wish I didn't behave like that. I'm sure lots of you have. I think a lot of us do. And it doesn't, you know, you can brush it off and go, oh, it didn't matter. You know, but the reality is, if you can grab that. So one of the things I do is, if you haven't worked out, I am a bit neurotic, but I also have a conflict issue. I don't know whether that's because I was the fourth child. I don't know whether that's because I'm 1 foot shorter than all of my brothers. I don't know whether that's because all my brothers have got hair and I don't. But I did have a conflict issue. And what I've tried to do, you know, and I always used to take the piss out of people at school, even though I was small, balding, and cheeky. And, you know, you'd think I'd get thumped, which I did a little. One of the things I do is I think when I get into a conflict situation, I imagine I am on a rugby field. or in a sports stadium, and I'm battling with that person. The other part of me, the sensible person, is sitting in the stands and watching these two people. For me, that was incredibly, you know, there's no two parts of me, right? There's one part of me. But for me to have the ability to look down on me in this situation and go, uh-oh, here we go. This is going to be massive conflict. What I used to do is write myself little notes that would say, I'm getting facetious, he is a dick. Be nice to him. Or control yourself. And I used to do those little things to actually get myself into the situation where I wasn't dismissive. The reality is, the only way you can actually move, you can't control your own behaviours, like we said in terms of profile awareness before. You actually have to believe that you don't want a conflict with that person. And so a lot of the work that I've done around that, and then working with owner managers and entrepreneurs, is trying to help them be aware of why they act in certain situations. And once they've got that underway, then they can look at how they might actually deal with that behaviour on an ongoing basis. Now, that's it. If anyone wants the Leo Tolstoy article about profile and state awareness, I'm at Ice Andy, or there's my email address there. And I would love to answer any questions that anyone has. If we go back to Corfu, it's competence, attitude, wisdom, and failure. Anyone got a question? Yeah. Emotional intelligence, yep. I think that's a great point. I think, you know, they talk about, in that emotional intelligence, they talk about the impact that you have on others. And I think that's incredibly relevant when we think as well about young staff coming in and how you deal with them, you know, how you work with them to get the most out of them. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, at the back. Yep.
Now, as someone who works in the tech field, I'm surrounded by tech people who are just like me.
Yep.
How do you give any advice for branching out and finding those people to compliment you? How should you go about finding those people?
So the question was, how do you go about finding people that compliment you or add to, you know, the strengths or weaknesses that you have? On the face of it, I think actually people like to be asked for help, especially if you personalise it. Can you help me? I think, though, it starts with having an awareness around your own strengths and weaknesses and then going on that search for people, you know, who, by the way, may be very different to you. I think they're out there. I think that there are a lot of people who like mentoring, who... with this qualification, I'd say, what I've found with a lot of entrepreneurs is they're not necessarily empathetic. And what I mean by empathetic is, and corporate people as well, they'll just tell you what the answer is. And what we try to say to them is, hey, buddy, don't tell me what to do. Tell me what you did in a situation, and then let's have a conversation about my own situation, because my stuff is not yours. And I think, so finding people who are prepared to ask questions, you know, from a mentoring perspective, and who are not there to tell you what to do, because it's your life, I think is really important. I think there are a lot of people who want to give advice, but often, you know, it doesn't necessarily hit. It's a bit like dating in America. You just keep batting the averages until you finally get the strike. We don't generally do that in New Zealand. Up until Tinder came along. I don't know how many friends you've got who are on Tinder, but I'm not, but it's outrageous. All the youngsters in the ice house, all of them are on Tinder. And they go off for a few weeks to have a break. Okay, anyone else got a question? Yes, at the back there, sir. So it's a great question. How do you check for attitude? I mean, I think the reality is if you're a startup entrepreneur who's a great coder, right, and doesn't maybe have that great business experience, you're looking for a sales guy or girl or a marketing person to come on board, that's really hard, right, because you're marrying into a startup. And attitude can change because of personal circumstances or you just misjudge. So in the startups, you know, what we are now doing with startup entrepreneurs is we're saying, hey, vest the shares over a period of time, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, and if it just doesn't work out, then pull the trigger. You know, when you're hiring for attitude, you know, it's quite interesting. What we do in the Ice House, and we don't always get it right, is, and we actually learn it from Microsoft, we don't get all 35 people to interview, you know, new hires, but we put different people in and around that person. We ask our receptionist, Kaylee, what did you, you know, how was she when she came in? You know, and we don't do it formally, we just kind of ask. And we try and get a sense for people. I think the reality is we all make mistakes around the attitude, but the more you spend time with people, you know, the more you start to get to understand who they are, what they're about. I think in small businesses, you struggle. A lot of us struggle with that hiring, and we do get, you know, I think the stats are probably about 30% get it wrong. So I don't really have any other great answers around attitude. I think what I'd say is when you get the right, when you get some people who have just got an amazing attitude, it's probably the bell curve of the employees that can wave one way or another. I think the other thing that happens is attitude can change depending on how they are, that your staff are supported. And yeah, there's a photo that was in the slide deck around that chick, you know, in the attitude column. And the thing that we observe with sub-30-year-olds is they just, if they don't get the vibes, then they just turn off and they clock out and then they bugger off when they get another opportunity. And good on them for doing it. They'll be there and work just as hard, in my view, as any other person. But if they don't get out of it, they just turn off and go, hey, there's another opportunity there. Any other questions? Yeah.
What do you value the most within your
stuff? What do I value the most? Just taking ownership and getting things done. You know, what in the Ice House, what we, satisfying customers for us is not actually the hardest thing. For us, the hardest thing is getting the customer, getting an owner or an entrepreneur to give us equity or to spend money with us. That is really, really hard. And so that doesn't mean I value salespeople more than anyone else, but you know, in our world, we're trying to do the impossible stuff, trying to convince people to do shit they don't want to do. And if we don't get the sale in our business, you know, we don't get to have the fun with the customer. So one of the things that we've driven really massively in the Ice House is having a sales culture, and that been okay. And we've lost a couple of key people who thought that having a sales culture was really dirty, you know, and having quarterly commissions and weekly sales calls and all of that. And that's just too bad for those people because they didn't align with where we wanted to take the organisation for us to be successful. I think that attitude, get up and go, taking responsibility, you know, is something that's, you know, pretty special in those people. I think what we're learning is when you hire a 23-year-old who's got great attitude, they don't have wisdom, they don't have competence, and you have to be really careful about oversetting the environment for their expectation. And that can lead them to leaving because, you know, it's bloody hard being really good in our game when you're 23. You've got great attitude, but you haven't got the other things. Is that you, Paul? Anyone else? Questions? Yeah. Yep.
How did they deal with you?
I think, well, they probably talk to each other. So actually, in my situation, I was chairman of the industry association, and they did a mutiny and got rid of me. They did a mutiny and got rid of me as chairman. They said, we didn't want you. Ironically, the person who replaced me is now in jail. But, you know, I totally deserved it because my behaviour wasn't right and, you know, I wasn't collaborative and I was too dismissive and I was too good, you know. And, you know, the reality is we're like Icehouse is like Rolls Royce of resources. We've got amazing partnerships with, like, BNZ, you know, Microsoft and those guys. And working with some of the guys in the regions, they've got one-tenth of the resources that we have. And so I think, you know, in my own situation, they wouldn't tell me either. And I mean, I find it really interesting. Every year we have a government funding round, and some of the government people say to me, oh, you know, we're really worried what you're going to say. And it's quite weird. Like, if you listen to that and you think, oh, are they just shitting with you? Or do they actually think you've got power? 5 years ago, I think I would have used that power against government to get what I wanted. Now, I just go, well, that's just weird. And I'm not going to act on... I'm not going to be a bully, or I'm not going to be irrational, or I'm not going to be disrespectful to others, you know, because actually, I think the big difference before is I used to justify my position. Now, I'm just like, hey, cool, they're doing cool stuff. See the best in them. Don't see the negative in them, and it's a lot better life to live. Because I reckon if you're always fighting, always trying to grab that rung and beat down someone else, that's bloody tiring. And who wants to do that? You know, and actually one of the things I find really interesting, in my daughter's school, I've befriended a number of the Chinese families because I've got an interest in the Chinese market, and I'm up to my 10th city in China that I've been to. You know, I befriended the parents because I was interested as to why they didn't go to all the social functions. And then you start to become friends with them, and you start to understand the environment, what it's like in China to compete, and the holiday they have when they come down here. And, you know, and their biggest concern with bringing their children to New Zealand is they'll never be able to go back to China to compete, because that market is, you know, massively challenging. So I should maybe do a 360 review of my partners. I know there's one guy who still thinks I'm a dick, but I think the others think I'm all right these days. Maybe they think I'm a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Just to follow up, what made you change?
What made me change? A number of events, to be honest. Feedback like that. I also got I got turfed off a not-for-profit board. Once I got turfed off, I was about to become the boss of that, and it's a golf club that my father's been a member for 70 years, and I was going to be the next guy to be the club captain, and I got sacked, and my mum died, and a whole bunch of stuff, and I went, there's got to be a better way, and then I started going to a coach. And maybe I told two directors of the Ice House that they were dicks. Maybe I got a warning letter. And I did get I got a warning letter from somebody who's, you know, really, you know, kind of like my second dad, who was a founder of the Ice House, co-founder. And he just said, mate, you've got to sort your crap out. And so all of those things come together, and you just go, you've got a choice, right? How do you want to behave? I think it's quite hard when you're always talking, you know, to have the comfort to say nothing. It's a really interesting thing. I remember going to Fletch Challenge, and there's this old guy in the room, right? He's older than you, but, you know, he's he's like 75, and he never said anything. And when I first started, I was like, God. You know, but my impudence didn't recognise that he didn't have to say anything. He didn't have anything to prove.
And it's pretty remarkable in terms of wisdom. Now, somebody at the back had a question.
Which one would you hire? A person with the average skill, but has good personality, attitude, or a person with great skill, but with also personality?
So it's a great question, right? Because I think I would always go attitude first, right? Unless the role required a lot of competence, right? And that skill level, you know, was, you know, that person was way ahead of that, then we would go for the competence, but we would test how we might be able to get flexibility in the attitude. Because what I know for sure is in teams, in sales-based organisations, if you've got a disruptive person who is about him or her alone and not the organisation, it is so corrosive. Now, in this day and age when you can have, you know, coders and people working from around the world in different places, sometimes you can get away with that attitude, but I think in a team-based environment, if they're not going to toe the line, then they're not worth, you know, having around. And what you see with people is you then get, especially as a leader, you'll get other staff members going, they condone that behaviour and that crap attitude. It just doesn't work. So attitude first for me, and then if the skill level is really important, you know, I'd be prepared to not hire somebody if we didn't think that they would fit into the organisation. Yeah. Oh, what? Just what? Yep, yep. 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 Yeah, so the question was, what do you do if people, they don't talk up or they don't give the opinion? In a small organisation like us, 35 people, you know, that's pretty easy, right? We identify who are the quiet ones and then you try and build their confidence and help them. And sometimes they'll never say it in a team of 10 people or a room of 10 people. So you've got to create the environments for them to build their trust, their confidence, so that they actually will come out with that. And look, I think I've got 5 people in my organisation who are afraid of saying something. And so you just got to find, you know, sometimes you take them for coffee, you just got to help them build their confidence. Yeah, that's fine too sometimes. Well, that's then maybe passive-aggressive. You know, we take responsibility and, you know, to try and get the best out of people. And if they don't want to contribute or be a part of it, you know, it's like, you know, what's the policy of people working from home versus, you know, I heard the other day, is it Google? No, was it Amazon? I think Amazon. Yeah, Apple, you're not allowed to work from home. HP, not allowed to work from home. You know, at the Ice House, we're a bit tight in rooms, so we've said recently, hey, if you want to work from home, that's cool. Bloody hell. I think 1/3 of the staff worked from home 3 days last week. And so you get to the situation where you kind of, you know, you're always trying to get it back in balance. So for me, it's just about sometimes it's direct, sometimes getting the manager, getting other people. In small environments, I reckon it's really easy. You just got to find that way. And then if people really don't want to contribute but do their job and are not disruptive, then actually that's fine too, in my view. Now, there was somebody over here had a... Yep. 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 No, we test... I'll probably be proved wrong, but we test every person in the organisation, whether it's managers or maybe we don't. Actually, we don't test the interns. So we get a lot of kids from universities, AUT, Auckland Uni. We don't test them because they're slaves. and after a period of time, we start paying them. I think I heard from that lady Helen Kelly the other day that that's illegal. Illegal. But so we do test a lot of people, and it's really interesting actually what we do is we give the successful and unsuccessful people a copy of the report. Because what we're trying to do is get them to go, ah, they think I'm a nut bar, or that I behave in this sort of way. And what we are trying to do is get the balance of the team right in that regard. It's not Myers-Briggs. We do a bit of that. We do a bit of learning styles, and we do the psychometric, you know, count colours, numbers sort of stuff. So we might tailor it for salespeople versus operational people. Liz Wotherspoon, who works with me, who's like a psych person, she always tells Grafton, who do our assessments, what to test on, and then we read the reports. And it is interesting when you read those to see. You know, I've even heard schools now, within reason, starting to create tools for children and, you know, teenagers to try and understand some of this profile awareness around who they are, what they are, and how they behave. So I think it gets tailored. I mean, all we do, by the way, in the Ice House is loaf off the Sparks and the BNZs and the Microsofts around the tools that you guys use, and then try and adapt it in our world, because we're tiny. Right, anyone else?
You've got daughters, yeah.
I've got daughters, yes, a 10 and an 8-year-old.
Do you see any of the aspects of your personality that you change?
Yeah, so the question was, do I see any of the aspects of my personality in my daughters? So yes, I do. And I suppose, you know, what my wife and I, Carla and I, try and do is, you know, not close anything down, is to help them understand their feelings and the reasons for why they do things, you know. So we're always asking them, you know, well, how did that make you feel? And hopefully she's not going to say, well, I wanted to bash the dick. And she doesn't say that, but just, you know, so yes, we do see those things. So my eldest has a need for recognition, you know. Now, she's the first, not the fourth, and I was the fourth. What I would say, however, it's her life, not mine, and it's not for me to put my shit on her. So that's my life, my problems. And what you find with a lot of people is that the first thing they want to do is... parents want their kids to be like them, go to the same school, do the same sport, all of that. Others want the antithesis of that. Oh, I don't want them to be, you know. So I'm quite sensitive about when they get teased, right? And, you know, I can absolutely tell you that we work really hard at our kids' friends that they have. And some are dodgy parents, so we don't allow them to go around there for sleepovers. Some we just don't like the kids, right? We just don't like the kids, but guess what? It's her life, not ours. And my daughter loves them. And, you know, so we're not, you know, safety, yes, we make the call for them, but we absolutely don't. You know, we have to keep our feelings to ourselves, and I get whacked by the wife if I let out that I think, you know, the kids are just like the parents, which are pains in the ass. Yeah. Where to from here? For me? I'm going to go for a beer after this, hopefully with Paul Spain. Where to, you know, for me, I've been at the Ice House 13 years. I feel privileged to be, you know, helping entrepreneurs. I want to keep doing that and keep on that journey of forever trying to find a way that you can short-circuit somebody's experience and grow in their business. You know, I'm in the change business, which is about helping people recognise the stuff they need to do to get there faster, even when they don't know. So, you know, I don't want to change anything. Just keep doing it and learning. Hey, thanks very much, and have a great rest of the conference.